On this episode of China Unscripted, who really started the trade war? Lessons from Casablanca and pandas, the Communist Party's greatest weapon. Welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshda.
Well, guys, once again, America has been brought together by the Chinese Communist Party. Of course, I'm talking about the trade war, one of the few things that we can say is actually truly a bipartisan issue. Isn't that heartwarming?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to know that when push comes to shove, we can all oppose the Chinese Communist Party.
It's touching.
Yeah.
Well, we often describe it as a trade war, but I think that there's a logical fallacy in this.
Are you saying I'm making logical fallacies, Matt?
Yes.
Oh.
It's not actually a trade war?
It's actually not. It is a trade war. But
so I wasn't making a logical fallacy. Who's the logical fallacy now, Matt?
Your face is actually. So let me just explain.
Matt, if you're gonna like insult someone, you really gotta like give it a second to land before you move on.
I'm bad at jokes, but
good at insults.
No, I'm also bad at insults, but I'm pretty decent at explaining economic issues. So here's my issue with how the trade war has been reported on, which is a lot of media are calling it Trump's trade war, or Trump started the trade war. And the reason I think this is a problem is that what Trump did to initiate these tariffs on Chinese goods was in response to an existing thing the Chinese Communist Party was doing, which is theft of U.S. intellectual property, hacking, different types of corporate espionage, unfair trade practices, violating WTO's terms.
Currency manipulation,
illegal subsidies, illegal according to WTO rules that China had signed. And so for all these reasons, China has been cheating on trade for nearly two decades. And the tariffs, because the U.S. doesn't have a lot of economic tools to deal with this kind of thing, Trump decided, well, tariffs are one tool, and they're probably the best we've got.
Well, okay. I don't think that's why Trump decided to use tariffs. I think Trump decided to use tariffs because he is tariff man, as he called himself. He likes tariffs.
Yeah, I know. He's been talking about tariffs for decades. He started with, you know, tariffs on Japan. And,
In the 80s. When he took out this full page like ad out in the New York Times talking about why the U.S. should put tariffs on Japan.
Right. And I mean, yes, Trump has been talking about tariffs for a long time, but my point is still that tariffs are one of the few tools we have left to deal with this, because our disputes within the WTO forum haven't really had a meaningful impact on it. Our, you know, agreements that previous U.S. administrations had tried to make with China didn't really go anywhere. I mean, I know Obama and Xi Jinping had signed an agreement, you know, no corporate espionage hacking, which kind of worked a little bit, but
it
not really.
It worked briefly, and then it ramped back up again.
Right.
And also, that was when they made the laws that you have to hand it over as price of doing business in China.
That you have to have a joint venture equity partner when you are a Western company doing business in China, share intellectual property as a condition.
I think that's a little more complicated now than it was, but yeah, generally, that you still have to have a Chinese.
Yeah, Matt, that was a logical fallacy.
My point isn't to go into all the details of it. My point is that the Chinese Communist Party has been lying, cheating, and stealing for a long time. And the tariffs were an attempt to balance this relationship. And granted, they're not a perfect tool by any means, but they are probably the best possible tool that we have to try to balance it. And then the reason the trade war began is because the Chinese Communist Party decided to retaliate against the U.S.'s tariffs by implementing their own tariffs. And so to say the U.S. started the trade war is a little bit unfair, given that the actual trade war part of it started because of the Communist Party's response to U.S. tariffs.
I suppose, in a way, you could say the actual trade war started 20-some years ago after China joined the WTO.
Okay, because they were lying, cheating, and stealing and violating the rules of the WTO.
I mean, we've talked about the whole warfares thing.
Unrestricted warfare.
Unrestricted warfare, and like they have different warfares.
Yeah.
Economic warfare.
Now, hold on. Let me see if I get this. Let me see if I am clear on this. Trump has called himself Tariff Man.
Yeah, this was maybe...
That's a terrible superhero. Why not Golden Boy? I think that'd be much more appropriate to his character.
I'm going to double check this, but I am 99% sure he called himself Tariff Man.
Tariffs Man. Well, Matt, that's actually...
I'm just imagining, you know, like Trump as a superhero with a cape going into like, you know, some guys are robbing a convenience store and he's like, I'm Tariff Man. Stop or I'll raise tariffs on you guys.
Hey, okay. it's your Trump impersonation has gotten better. It's no longer Cartman.
From December 4th, 2018, Trump's tweet is ... I am a Tariff Man. All caps initial caps on Tariff and Man. When people or countries come in to raid the great wealth of our nation, I want them to pay for the privilege of doing so. It will always be the best way to max out our economic power. We are right now taking $billions in tariffs.
It's actually a pretty impressive superpower.
All caps, make America rich again.
Ooh.
It is actually a superpower to be able to raise billions of dollars through tariffs.
Stand up to the Chinese Communist Party. You would think that wouldn't need to be a superpower, but so few people have done it. I'm going to assume it must require some kind of magic.
Or just a lot of chutzpah.
Chutzpah. But that is a good point you make. The onus is not on Trump with this. It's that there's this pre-existing unfair situation that had to be solved somehow. But it is a trade war, so saying I'm a logical fallacy, Matt, that really hurt.
I'm sorry to hurt your feelings.
Well, that's good. I can forgive you.
I think you've hurt the feelings of superstar, the Chris Chappell people.
Even superstar television hosts have feelings.
That's true. And if I meet one, I'll ask them that. but yeah, kind of going off of this. Well, actually, let's talk about this. There's been this idea that Trump's tweets, since you just read it, tweet from Trump, have actually been more effective than CCP propaganda.
There was an article in the South China Morning Post.
A Hong Kong-based newspaper.
Yes, that is owned now by Alibaba, I think.
So questionable links to the Chinese state now.
It didn't used to be, but it was bought up a few years ago, and you can kind of see...
A change in reporting?
Yeah. It's Hong Kong's establishment English language newspaper, mm-hmm. let's say. There are other English language media like Hong Kong Free Press.
Which I recommend.
Which is like they're kind of...
Much, much better reporting than South China Morning Post.
But, you know, they're the kind of like underdog upstarts. Mm-hmm. And South China Morning Post has been around for decades.
Would you call them the New York Times of Hong Kong?
In terms of English language papers, I guess, but also because there just wasn't a lot of other options. And then, so this article was talking about how the CCP is kind of losing its publicity battle about the trade war. And part of the reason is because U.S. officials, especially Trump, have been talking about how the negotiations have been going. And mm-hmm. a lot of the things, like when Trump tweeted, was it only last Sunday?
Time flies. I don't know.
Or 2 Sundays ago, a couple weeks ago, about the fact that he was going to raise tariffs again because the negotiations went badly.
Very badly.
That's something that the...
Though we did a whole episode based on.
No, I was going to say that's something that the CCP is not used to because they wanted to. The idea is that they wanted to kind of keep all the negotiations under wraps.
They like to have things behind closed doors.
Right. And then so Trump kind of explicitly was talking about this. And even more recently, he basically, after Trump tweeted, then Lighthizer and Mnuchin came out and had a press conference where they said that, you know, they would describe it as the Chinese side had actually reneged. I always say that wrong. Reneged on some of their...
I have a hard time with Mnuchin's name often.
Well, I mean...
I tend towards Munchkin for
really?
Some reason.
Hmm.
Just nothing against him, but just like when I see it written down.
Uh-huh.
Something about
he doesn't come across like a munchkin.
No, it's just whatever happens in my brain when I see something that starts with an M and then there's an N and then it ends with an N. Munchkin.
There's not a lot of words like that.
It's munchkin.
Yeah.
There you go. Munchkin. When you said munchkins, I thought of, did Dunkin' Donuts have donuts called munchkins, or am I making that up?
Munchkins are the, oh no, they were in the Wizard of Oz. I was thinking Oompa Loompas in my mind.
Oh.
Okay, so U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin.
This is all just covering for time so Shelley could look up an article.
No, but now she's been distracted by it, so
that's true.
She hasn't actually looked it up
yet. You know, it's a double-edged sword.
So, okay, so here's some, and then Trump came, well, so Mnuchin and Lighthizer came out and basically confirmed what Trump was tweeting about. And then Trump has kept talking about it, even after the trade war talks kind of fizzled out. He was talking about, and this is a quote from a talk with a property agents association in Washington, D.C. It said, you know, that the CCP side or the Chinese negotiators broke a deal that they had already agreed to. And Trump said, I mean, I'm used to that. I've done it many times myself, but I tried to do it a little bit nicer. China took out a lot of the things that we negotiated that were done, and I said, you can't do that. You've been doing that too long to our poor presidents who had no idea what was happening.
Well, that's so nice. He's giving the previous presidents like a little bit of compassion. I haven't heard him talk so nicely about them. Poor guys.
Poor
Obama, poor Bush, poor Clinton.
They just didn't know any better, you know. But anyway, so this kind of messaging has basically shaped the idea that it was the CCP, like the Chinese side, that had scuttled the trade deal. And now what you see in Chinese state-run media is like a lot of defensive messaging.
He put them on the defensive.
Basically. So they didn't have a very coordinated voice at first because I think the tweets caught them off guard.
He's really Twitter man. That's his real superpower.
I guess it is. He's Twitter man. Although that doesn't sound very...
It doesn't sound good, but the reality, you know, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Should it be like Tweet Man? Does that sound good?
Tweet Man.
I think it's also interesting just because President Trump, like, directly does his own tweets.
Well, like, mostly.
But so he's doing this in the most unfiltered way directly with the public.
Yeah. Which is something people had praised Obama for doing, like using social media as a way that's like a direct link to him. But Trump is really, like, you know it's Trump tweeting.
Well, yeah. You know when it's Trump tweeting, and you also know when it's not Trump tweeting.
Yes, it's very clear.
If nothing is in all caps, then probably one of the staffers wrote it for him.
If nothing's in all, like, Make America Rich Again was in all caps, so that was a good sign.
Yeah.
Also, Tariff Man being initial cap for some reason. That's all.
Tariff Man. Sending out 25% tariffs on $300 billion. Okay. That was not my best.
I mean,
really, Chris, I'm disappointed. Don't you have a master's degree in music composition?
Well, you know, they sell degrees these days.
Well, speaking of the Chinese Communist Party's propaganda about the trade war, CCTV 6, there's many CCTV channels, but China Central Television, they were apparently have been playing anti-American movies for the past few days.
So are you talking like Chinese language anti-American movies?
So let me pull up what the films
were. Yeah, I want a good example of an anti-American movie.
It's just Captain America, but like he's stumbling and he's farting.
I was actually thinking like, what was that Tom Cruise movie, like American Made, where it's about like the CIA doing drug running in Nicaragua and stuff?
Yeah.
But you know, Hollywood makes its own movies that have messages that make the U.S.
look bad. China has a lot of sway over Hollywood. I'll tell this story while Shelley's looking this up. I met a guy who is working Gosh, I hope this story doesn't get him killed or something.
But let's not use his name.
Okay, so this guy is working with a producer in Beijing about a movie, I guess like 10 or 20 years ago, like Chinese authorities and the U.S., what is it, DEA, DIA?
The
Drug Enforcement Agency.
Drug Enforcement, so DEA, yeah. Like worked together to bring down this Chinese like cocaine or heroin kingpin. It was one of those drugs. I can't remember which one.
So this is like Narcos, but in China?
Well, I think he might have been in the U.S. I don't know. Okay. But basically he was selling it as like, oh, you know, this is like a story about how great, like a great tale of like the U.S. and China working together to bring down the bad guys. And I'm just thinking like, you know, this is a total propaganda piece you're working on. Like China is engaged in drug warfare against the U.S. They're funding Mexican cartels with weapons, and they used to run lots of meth through them. They're sending fentanyl into this country. Like, that's the real story. And so, like, you're working with the producer in Beijing to make this happy tale about how, Shelley, don't look at me. Focus on what this is. The whole point of this story is that
I'm ready.
Okay, well, then I'll finish the story. But yeah, it's just this whole propaganda thing about, like, how, you know, China and the U.S. are working together when the real story is China is waging a drug war on the U.S.
Okay, so...
No, you're allowed to react to my interesting story before you get into
Well,
that.
What I was thinking, actually, was I wonder if that deal is still on now.
This is a good question.
I think that is actually one of the ways that... Because when we're talking about the trade war and China retaliating, or the Chinese regime retaliating with tariffs, they have a limit of how they can much they can do, because the U.S. exports way less to China than mm-hmm. China exports to the U.S., hence the whole trade imbalance, part of the thing that Trump was upset about, etc. So they can't raise as much tariffs as the U.S. can, just because of the trade imbalance itself, but they can use other things to try to pressure the U.S., including putting pressure on American companies. And there are so many Hollywood deals happening with China right now. I wouldn't be surprised if that is one of the things that happens, is, you know, you try to exert pressure in all of these other ways to, you know, you know,
the next Avengers big bad guy is a trade war. They have to fight it.
That's what will happen in, what is it called, phase two? Or
phase two of the MCU.
Well, suddenly it got a lot more boring.
Yeah, I'm glad. Well, I can't say anything because that would be a spoiler for Endgame. But yes.
I haven't seen it yet, so.
Okay, then I'm really glad I didn't say anything.
Would I have gotten very mad at you on...
I would have turned to dust.
I see. Okay, so these are the movies that were aired on CCTV6. They are set during the war to resist U.S. aggression and aid Korea.
Translation, World War II.
No. What? Translation, the Korean War.
The war to resist U.S. aggression and aid Korea.
Oh, to resist. I just heard war to resist. And so
oh, because you, Japanese. Japanese aggression. There was a lot of aggression happening against China, I think.
This really shows that I listened to the first half of what she was saying and then tuned out. And was like, oh, yeah, I know what you say. I don't need to listen to the whole thing.
This is what happens in our modern, you know, you're just like distracted by everything all the time.
That's right.
Look over there.
Ah, it's a tweet.
We live in a world where we're constantly looking at our cell phones.
I'm currently looking at my cell phone. Okay. So they don't really have like more modern anti-American films, I guess. So they're
pulling
playing
out the hit list.
Yes. So one is called Battle on Shangan-Ling Mountain, which focuses on a group of Chinese People's Volunteer Army soldiers who are holding Triangle Hill for several days against U.S. forces. I'm reading this from whatsonweibo.com, which they did an article about this whole thing. Another one is called Heroic Sons and Daughters, which tells the story of a political commissar in China's volunteer army who finds his missing daughter on the Korean battlefield. And the third is Surprise Attack.
That's
which
it?
That's what it's called.
Wow.
Revolves around the mission of the Chinese army to blow up a strategic bridge, cutting off supplies to the American army and allowing the Chinese to engage in a full attack.
I wonder if they any of these movies go into like China's strategy of just sending wave after wave of people at the American troops to be gunned down. Like it, the
like patriotic like cannon fodder.
Yeah,
that, like, I mean that was Mao's strategy.
It was, and I forget exactly what the ratio was, but it was something like one U.S. kill for 16 Chinese soldiers. It was something ridiculous.
Yeah, Mao just sent his own people to be absolutely slaughtered.
Yeah, and while it was also convenient for him because what was going on in China at the time was the Great Famine, so it basically gave him a way to funnel a lot of angry young men into the army and into their graves, so they wouldn't be a threat to him.
Wow, that's very strategic of Mao.
Remember what Josh said? Mao was the best communist.
Yeah, he was the best communist.
He knew how the game was played.
These were classics kind of from the 1960s.
I feel like Casablanca, but...
Yeah, but more anti-American than Casablanca.
I'm just imagining like an alternate reality where the Nazis were not defeated, and they're like, look at this American anti-Nazi propaganda Casablanca. It makes the Germans look so bad.
Actually, an interesting thing is that Casablanca...
FYI, I do not support the Nazis. Just to be clear, Internet.
Let's just not publish this podcast on the Internet.
That is a logical fallacy.
Go on, Shelley.
Oh, I was going to say that Casablanca...
No, we already heard half of what she said. We don't need it. We can just fill in the rest. Oh, her fists, or she's a claw. Her hands have become a claw.
Gritting teeth.
If
smiling.
I turn to dust.
Yeah, once I get the Infinity Gauntlet. Specifically just Chris. Everybody else in the world is safe, in the universe, really. But Chris will turn to dust.
It seems needless to gather the Infinity Stones for that when you could just like push me off a bridge.
So anyway, Shelley, what were you saying before?
What if you hit someone on the way down? I wouldn't want to be responsible for that.
What kind of... Why would there be a person under the bridge?
I have no idea.
The poor troll.
We are going to Norway, you know.
There are trolls in Norway, I've heard.
Yes. I believe there's a photo of you in the arms of a troll in Norway.
That's a terrible thing to say about my girlfriend.
Just kidding.
She's horrible. Just okay. Kidding, she doesn't exist.
Yes, that's the true one. So Casablanca was actually made as, well, part of the message was to
I'm sorry, I know what you're gonna say, and so but then that played through my mind of the whole just listening to half of what you say.
Okay, so what am I gonna say, Chris?
It was created as sort of a way to get the American people on the side of doing a war.
That the whole thing of Rick represents America.
Yeah. And doesn't want to get involved, just wants to drown himself in his gin.
Yeah, so it was originally filmed, I think, before the U.S., before Pearl Harbor. Am I being anti-historical?
That's my guess, because Pearl Harbor was what kind of made people be like, oh, yes, war. That's a good idea. But so you see, I didn't need to sit here and listen to you, Shelley. I just needed the first half of what you were saying.
This justifies...
Well, no, it's 1942, so that is actually post.
Oh.
Post Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor. But, it still is. Rick is America, and, you
Who's
know.
The girl, then? What does she represent? Of all the gin joints in all the world, you had to walk into mine.
Maybe
Winston
she's the
Churchill.
Does she represent like the idea of freedom?
I don't know.
Or something.
This is a question that makes me like want to be quiet and think about it, which is probably not good for a podcast.
Casablanca is probably not the best subject to talk about on this podcast, given that none of us really know.
Casablanca is one of my favorite movies. It's one of the best movies. It's basically Star Wars, just set in 1942.
In Morocco.
Casablanca is one of my favorite movies, too. And I think...
Jump on the bandwagon, Shelley.
Well, what I was going to say is the message at the end basically is the idea that...
Beans are good for people.
You know, he's kind of struggling between like his personal, like his like love you know, versus the like larger issue of like meaning in life and like, you know, being a freedom fighter and that, and kind of Casablanca manages to say that you can have both in your life if you're willing to sacrifice something. Like, basically, he could have, we'll always have Paris, like he could have his love back that he had kind of become cynical and given, and he could have like purpose and meaning in life, but he had to kind of be the bigger person and sacrifice
the love
for that. But like, he still had the memory of the love, so it's like he had the love but he didn't have her.
Yeah, and it's also his process of healing, because he, like it says in the movie, that he was like a gun runner for like the some underdogs in another war.
He's the always Spanish Civil War. But anyway, that Spanish Civil War is such a complicated subject. Yeah. Let's
come back. We're not doing history.
Speaking of wars, trade war.
Oh, yeah. This was the point I wanted to make. The reporting in the U.S. has sometimes been very strange in talking about it. I think you made a good point, Matt, about how it's being labeled as like Trump's trade war sometimes, when it's really that is inaccurate for all the reasons you said. If you need a refresher, go back and listen to the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, but basically Trump didn't start the fire.
It was always burning.
Since China joined the WTO?
Yes, that's how the song goes. I think so.
Yeah. Actually, I remember being very excited about the first time I heard that song, which I think my music teacher played for us in second grade or third grade or something like that. And we had to study it in music class. This was years after the song came out, by the way. But she for some reason wanted us to do this lesson on this Billy Joel song, and I was excited because it mentioned China briefly.
it does
but in,
because of the trade war,
no, actually because it mentions Mao Zedong.
Oh. Well, he was the best communist
in retrospect. Well, because it's about all the things that are burning, right? Like all the problems of the world.
Doesn't the Beatles song Revolution also mention Mao Zedong? We carry around pictures of Chairman Mao. Don't you know that you can count me out? Something like that.
For some reason, my teacher decided to go with Billy Joel.
Well, I can see why. Yes, the reporting has not always been great. There was one funny thing you tweeted. There was originally a piece in the UK tabloid, The Mirror, but then got reported
by the UK tabloid The Observer.
Yes.
So this was a story that basically the headline and the lead paragraph of the story implied that the Chinese authorities had recalled the pandas from San Diego, the giant pandas, because of the trade war.
They're taking their pandas back.
Specifically because of Trump's trade war. And I was like, at first I was like, really? That seems, I was all ready to get like angry about that.
I'm imagining like at the end of Miss Saigon where they're like airlifting the people out of South Vietnam, but they're all pandas, and then there's like one panda left behind.
This sounds kind of adorable, actually.
It is. Wait, I say take the pandas.
Did you admit that pandas were adorable?
No, I like the idea of that, like, you know, the panda is left behind and is sad and suffering.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I say get rid of the pandas. Take the pandas. Good riddance.
It is good riddance because they cost like $1 million a year or something like that for the zoo. They have to pay just to be able to have the pandas.
Very important, before we go on to how much we hate pandas, the whole thing was a lie. Well not a lie, just
the way the media reported it was...
Well, the way these British tabloids reported it was wrong.
The mainstream media, all of them.
So, Shelley, you want to finish the thing you were about to say?
So...
I already know what you're going to say, just based off of that. Matt?
I'm going to strangle something.
Is that something me? Is that something a panda?
Dang it, now I can't finish.
Well, let me take over then. My plan worked all along. Essentially, the story was a complete fib because China was already recalling these pandas.
Yes, we had actually done a story in China Uncensored. It was one of our headlines about how the time was up for these pandas, so they were just going to go back to China, which all pandas eventually must
It sounds like a deep philosophical thing. All pandas eventually go back to China.
Yeah, like
it's all, like all dogs go to heaven.
Yes. Yeah. That, by the way, was a very disturbing movie.
Yeah,
to
I kind of blocked it.
A 6-year-old me.
I relate to that.
Yeah. But it's interesting how the media picked up on this as if like...
Well, two British tabloids.
Two British tabloids, which represent all the media. Mm-hmm. Well, no, but it's like one picks it up and then another one picks it up.
It
and
is.
And it's the beginning of a potentially very dangerous cycle. But
Weird thing about the story was in the story itself, it kind of contradicted itself because if you read a little bit further, it was like, the San Diego Zoo held a goodbye party on April 6th for the pandas. So you're like, okay, well, that was way before Trump tweeted that... You know, about the tariffs and, mm-hmm. you know, all the stuff that would make the Chinese authorities mad enough to recall their pandas as if they were, you know, diplomats.
It actually is not a bad idea. Panda just recalled all pandas from the U.S. I bet some people would be upset. People who have the wrong views about pandas.
Are you saying that that would be a good strategy to retaliate in the trade wars to take the pandas?
Yes, I think so. I think that would get people upset.
And they'd see just how truly evil the Chinese Communist Party is from this one move.
No, I think Chris's point is that then they would blame...
They would blame Trump.
Yeah, for the pandas.
Oh, yeah, I see.
But as you were beginning to say, Matt, it doesn't make sense. Because first of all, pandas are they're horrible bears. They'll kill you if they'd had a chance. But they also cost zoos like millions of dollars.
They can make zoos a lot of money, too.
Or they can bankrupt the zoos or prevent other conservation funds.
Yeah, it really depends. I think
it's pandas are very expensive.
A zoo-by-zoo basis.
You basically rent a panda from China for an absurd amount of money. Typically, you rent a panda pair.
But my point about if the Communist Party decided to recall the pandas, they might...
Oh, please, I don't ever want to recall the pandas.
That was a dad joke.
But it would almost certainly backfire. It's kind of it made me think about how the Chinese courts recently charged these two Canadians with spying, which is essentially in retaliation for Canada arresting Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou. And I think that what the Communist Party thought they were doing is retaliating so that people would say, see, this is what happens when you mess with us. But really what this whole thing has done is raised awareness among the Canadian public about just how bad the Communist Party is and just how little they really respect rule of law, how much they're willing to violate the rules. I think it's actually been obviously not a good thing for these individual two Canadians in China, but the positive part is that it has helped expose just what kind of a regime Canada's been dealing with.
By the way, they didn't get charged yet. They just were formally arrested.
They were good after being disappeared for months?
Yes, yes. Now they're arrested.
They were formally arrested on, what, suspicion of spying?
Something to do with state secrets, but
because there's an initial charge, and I don't know if they have like a grand jury style formal indictment in China. I don't know what
technically
their legal process
they haven't
is.
Been indicted yet. Is okay. What I'm saying. They've been formally arrested.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, in a future podcast with Clive Hamilton, author of Silent Invasion, he will talk about how Canada probably needs that wake up call.
Yeah. Just so everyone is clear, not Silent Invasion, the book about Bigfoot.
Yes, that popular book that everybody knows about.
I don't know who's listening.
Maybe we have some Bigfoot experts. Yeah.
Did we tell that story on the podcast?
No, we did not.
Okay, well, so just so people don't think I'm sure you already think we're crazy, but when we were in Australia we attended the book launch for Silent Invasion, Clive Hamilton's book sort of about Chinese influence operations in Australia. But while we were there, we were also, I guess, like in a library or something, and we saw this other book that was called Silent Invasion, Bigfoot's presence in Pennsylvania.
Yes, something. It was like basically a book about like Bigfoot incidents sightings? Of Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania.
What's the plural of Bigfoot?
Big feet.
These are the questions of our time.
Wait, I thought there was only one Bigfoot. Are there more than one Bigfoot?
No, Bigfoot apparently is an extra-dimensional alien, which
so
is why
we're talking. Bigfoot is a species.
I think so. A species of alien. That's I believe that's what the current leading Bigfoot researchers are saying.
Bigfoots, big feet are aliens. I did not know that.
Maybe they should be called Bigfooters.
The Bigfooters. Bigfeetians.
Bigfeets.
Bigfeets. That sounds kind of adorable now.
More adorable than a panda, I'd say.
Yeah, maybe the San Diego Zoo should get some Bigfeets.
Well, you can't do that to an alien species. There's all kinds of diplomatic problems that would cause.
I believe there's going to be another documentary out about that soon.
About Bigfoots?
You know, interdimensional aliens in Men in Black. There's a new Men in Black movie coming out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Which stars Thor and the Valkyrie.
Yeah, so...
Oh, yeah, it is Valkyrie. I didn't put that together. She looks different without
the armor. So it is kind of funny that it's those two, but...
They have good chemistry.
They do.
They do seem to, yeah.
And who would have thought that Chris Hemsworth was going to be a comedic actor?
Yeah, he's really good at it.
He is really good at it.
He really kind of, in Thor Ragnarok, you could see him kind of coming out into that comedy role. So I thought that was pretty. Did you see that movie?
Yes, I did.
You're on an airplane, right? When we were on a trip to somewhere, I think.
Is that when I saw it? I don't know. I feel like I was more comfortable when I saw it. So probably not. Oh, yeah, we're going to Oslo soon. That'll give me a chance to watch movies because I never watch movies except for when I'm on an airplane.
But you just said that you must have watched Thor Ragnarok somewhere else that was not on an airplane.
Oh my
God. Is a logical fallacy.
That is. Well done, Shelley.
Also, you and I went to see Avengers Endgame together.
That's
in an actual
true.
Movie theater.
That's true. So occasionally I will go see a movie.
So, but speaking of getting on an airplane, we are going to Oslo in a few days, which is...
A few days. When are we leaving?
Well, let's not reveal it to our listeners exactly.
Okay.
Well, we wouldn't want, you know, Chris's, like, fans, you know, mobbing him at the airport or anything.
We wouldn't?
but we will be there... the last week of May.
Do I need to be packed now? Is that what I'm asking?
No, you've got a little bit of time to pack.
Good. We are doing this on the airplane right now.
How have I not noticed this?
So the Oslo Freedom Forum is an event put on every year in Oslo and sometimes also in other cities where they bring these activists from around the world to come and talk about, I would say to sum it up in a sentence, the activists are talking about standing up to authoritarian regimes in their own countries.
Yeah, and we've talked about it a few times because this will be our second Oslo Freedom Forum, but fourth overall because we went to one in New York City and one in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as always, it is both heartwarming and heartbreaking at the same time.
That's true.
But if...
Hearts break more cleanly once they're warmed up.
Is that why? You should know.
Wait, what does that mean?
Oh, that Matt's such a heartbreaker.
Implying what?
Yeah, I don't.
I was giving you a compliment about your handsomeness, but apparently that didn't come through.
Okay.
Yeah.
That went completely right by me.
Yes.
Those of you listening to a podcast probably can't tell, but Matt is extremely handsome. It's kind of obnoxious sometimes.
Okay. So at any rate, so the Oslo Freedom Forum, and one of the things that's interesting is that every time we go, we meet all these activists in different countries. So whether it's like Eritrea or Bolivia, and it's like all these authoritarian things that are happening in their country tend to be supported often materially by the Chinese Communist Party. So whether it's training for their soldiers or weapons or financial support.
Internet censorship.
There are so many countries.
Belt and Road stuff.
Yeah, especially. A lot of Belt and Road stuff. All these countries with authoritarian leaders are getting support from the Chinese Communist Party.
It really is, like we said in the recent episode, the One Belt, One Road is really one belt, one ring to rule them all. That was in the context of New Zealand joining up, and New Zealand's where they filmed Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is where we get the phrase, one ring to rule them all.
Boy, that really killed the joke.
Yeah, that
I just had to clarify. Maybe people haven't heard of Lord of the Rings.
I know who hadn't heard of Lord of the Rings. Some of the Chinese people who posed with you,
thinking I was
from Game of Thrones at the Hobbiton in New Zealand.
So that, just to let people know what the heck we're talking about, is.
Oh, Chris was dressed as Elrond.
I was dressed as Agent Smith, dressed as Elrond.
You're dressed as Hugo Weaving, dressed as Elrond.
One of those.
And then all these, like, people just assumed that this was cosplay and you were just, like, going there dressed up for fun. But then the Chinese tourists who were at that site, like, they were lined up to take photos of you because they must have thought you were some, like, official part of the Hobbiton setup.
Or something.
Yeah, no, it was really funny. And then Alan, our cameraman, heard someone say,
"Actually, oh my gosh, no, that was Matt. Me."
Oh, did I just give Alan credit for something that you did?
Also, did you just mix up me and Alan?
You guys kind of look alike.
Both Asian. he has a better beard than I do.
He does have a better beard, but otherwise, you guys look alike.
So, backing off just from this. Thinking back to those Chinese tourists, I have started reading Discworld, and one of the main characters in that is a tourist named Two Flower. And really, his character reminds me a lot of those Chinese tourists, just the general sense of wonder. And, yeah.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
I've read some Discworld books, but not that one.
This was Color of Magic?
Color of Magic and the second one is.
Yeah, that's I've read Color of Magic. I think it's a fun book.
Yeah. Also, take place on a flat Earth disc.
Yeah.
Which is very important and relevant.
I think it is.
Is there ever a podcast that we do that you don't manage to bring up the flat Earth somehow?
I'm sure, you know, actually, when we had Josh on and we were talking about the origins of communism, I don't think I mentioned it.
So one out of 33.
Is that how many this is?
This is the 33rd podcast we've done.
Okay.
Somebody.
But the very first one was called
The Color of Magic?
No, the very first podcast was called Elves Are Flat Earthers, which is Shelley. This was Shelley's
idea. That was my fault.
Yes.
Wasn't it Alan? I'm pretty sure it was Alan.
Hey, guys, I'm Alan.
That's very offensive.
We should do a podcast where we're all, like, doing impressions of each other.
That reminds me of our voice class we just were in, Charlie.
Oh, okay. I think that would only be amusing to us and not really to... We should do that episode if we want to tank our view... I was going to say our viewership, but I said this is our listenership. Yes.
If we haven't done that already with this podcast.
Why do they call it listenership? It's not a ship.
Okay, moving on. Actually, somebody said... In response to our last podcast, that it seems like this is China off topic. That's... And then someone was like, they're always off topic. So I guess this is on brand for us.
I guess so. I feel like we have said some interesting, important things about the trade war and pandas.
And that's it.
I don't know. People listening, would you like us to be more on topic? Or like we just are?
I have an idea. How about... Instead of just talk, you know, coming up with an outline of things and then talking about them off the cuff, how about we script everything? So the entire podcast is scripted.
That's a good idea. And maybe we could put on a camera so it's filmed.
Yes. But we'd have to make it a little shorter. Like each episode would be like 8 minutes long.
Okay. So China Unscripted, the TV show.
Yes. Perfect.
There we go. I like it. Who would want to watch that show? Probably no one.
But anyway, back to the Oslo Freedom Forum. So we will be there at the end of May. And for any listeners who are for some reason listening to this in Norway, you can go to the Oslo Freedom Forum, and you can go to our China Uncensored fan meetup, which we're going to do on Wednesday the 29th at the Grand Hotel in Oslo, 6 p.m.
And then if they want to go to the Oslo Freedom Forum, we have a code for them, right?
Yes, we do. What you should do if you're interested and you're going to be in Oslo the last week of May is go to the China Uncensored YouTube channel, and we posted a video about that where we announced the fan meetup, and in that same video we give you the discount code for going to the Oslo Freedom Forum.
Going to the fan meetup is free,
yes,
by the way.
And just requires no sign up.
Right. That's just to be clear. But if you want to go to the forum itself, we have a discount code for you.
Yeah. I mean, the Oslo Freedom Forum folks invited us to go to the Oslo Freedom Forum, not just to enjoy the event, but also to interview people. And we're going to interview a whole bunch of really interesting people. And then you'll see those episodes published on China Uncensored over the next several weeks. And then also they have arranged a space for us to host a fan meetup for you guys, for the listeners and for our viewers of China Uncensored, just for fun, which will be on that Wednesday, May 29th. So at any rate, that is where we'll be.
And with that announcement, I think we'll wrap up today's China Unscripted. Thanks for listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganesta.
Talk to you next time.